College of Judaism.
And welcome.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Aleph Bet number Yud, 19, 11, whatever it is. So what is the consciousness of the Yud? The consciousness of the Yud is V'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha, love your neighbor. Unity, the totality of the energy and the light. This letter Yud gives the consciousness of what real sharing is all about. To share for the right reason and not because of the feeling of obligation and responsibility. The real consciousness of sharing is for one reason only. Love your neighbor as yourself for no other reason. Did we ever speak about the reason we don't see the klipah, the veil, the husk? Remember when we asked the questions regarding the klipah, we asked ourselves, why is it that we cannot see the klipah? Why can't we identify that which is blocking the light into our lives? What do you experience in life when you have the klipah? Do you know why it is so difficult to identify it? Because the moment you can identify it, it is no longer a klipah. Tell you a beautiful story about klipah. Maybe we'll understand what we're trying to get at here. There's the story about the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement. And one comes and says, someone comes to him once, said to him, tells him that he came to say hello. So the Baal Shem Tov inquired as to how he could be of service to the man. And the man responds, I don't need any help. I'm well off. I have a wonderful wife and children. I have a wonderful life. I don't need any help. But I heard that you were so famous, and so I was passing by this town where you live, and I felt it only proper for me to stop off and pay my respects. So the Baal Shem Tov said to him, well, before you go, I'd like to tell you a little story. Once there were two friends. They were very connected. They were close friends from the time they were children. And when they grew up, they got married. And one married a local girl and the other married a girl from a different city. And so they moved apart. And when they parted from each other, they swore to each other that they would keep in contact one with the other. And that's what really happened in the beginning. They kept in contact. They sent letters to each other. But after a while, one letter was not sent and the contact became less and less and less. And it so happened that the one who had moved away became very wealthy, and the one who remained became very poor. And one day the poor man eventually heard about how wealthy his friend was. He felt that since they were so connected, he would go ask him for some help. After all, he had a great many debts to pay and the bills were piling up. And so he goes and he visits his friend and tells him of his situation. The friend tells him, don't worry. He would take care of all of that. He'd give him half of his wealth. So the poor man was very happy, and he was able to pay all of his debts, and there was so much money left over that he was able to begin a new business. And he became very wealthy. But in the meantime, the wealthy man went bankrupt and lost everything. So the man figured that since he had helped his friend before, this time his friend will help him. So he goes and visits his friend and explains the situation, tells him how he has no money, and he asks him to help him. But his staunch friend says no. And he tells him why. He says, you see, if I help you now, then you will succeed, and now I will become poor, because I now understand how it works, and therefore I will not give you anything. So the man accepts this answer and goes away. And he trusts in God. He trusts in the light. He makes a little money and he makes a few investments. He moves far away and once again he becomes very wealthy. And the friend who would not help him lost everything once more. So once more he goes back to the wealthy friend and asks him for help. And so the wealthy friend forgives him and he gives him once again half of his wealth. And they both grow old, and eventually they die. Now, it was clear cut that the good friend was going to go to paradise, to Gan Eden. And the other guy was going to go straight to hell. So the good guy says, if my friend doesn't come with me to the Garden of Eden, I'm not going. If you want me to come in, he must come with me. This is a package deal. So the decision was that they both would return and the situation would be reverse. The good guy would be the poor person and the bad guy will be the rich person. And the poor guy will now come and ask for money. And if the rich guy gives him the money, this time around he will earn the merit of returning to the Garden of Eden. Okay, good story? So the poor man comes and asks for money. And the servant doesn't want to let him in. And the rich man throws him out and the poor man dies. So the man who was listening to the story from the Baal Shem Tov began to cry. And the man said to him, that's me. You're describing me. I'm the bad guy. Please help me. Please give me a way to atone because I was the one who did all these terrible things. Please help me. And the Baal Shem Tov said, oh, so not everything is fine in your life. Not everything is perfect. And he proceeds to tell him what to do and how to correct the situation. But think about this. The Baal Shem Tov was able to perceive the man that was in front of him. He saw the total picture. He was able to identify the klipa. But with us, it's not that easy. We must be able to identify our own klipa. And that is not easy. But that's one of our functions, to be able to recognize that veil which blocks the light from our existence. We don't see the klipa, and we don't see the light as well. If people were able to see the light, there would be no problem seeing the klipa. So because of this process of mercy, things are concealed. And so we have to do all the action that is necessary to get the light and to see the light, and then we'll be able to see the klipa. And this is what the Yud teaches us. Because the Yud is the consciousness and the instrument that can remove klipa. Got it? You see the light, and when you see the light, you can identify the klipa and remove it. The Yud tells us that you must get involved, and you must feel the other's pain so that you truly love your neighbor as yourself. And this all has to do with your consciousness. You have to let them know that everything is not okay, but never to change him, just to let him know. That's how you love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, that's an introduction. Now, we as yet have not even touched the letter Yud, of course. I just gave you an introduction to this. We said that the Yud was the Milky Way connection. And we did say that the Yud brings the power of love your neighbor as yourself and injects the power of mercy. That we discussed. So when we talk about the Yud, the consciousness of the 1 second, not necessarily the 1 second for sake of restriction, but also we're talking about tolerance towards others, caring for others, and that's the consciousness that the Yud injects. And if you remember, we asked, how could the Yud be connected to that aspect of love your neighbor? How can we prove that the Yud is really that force of love your neighbor as yourself? And we also asked the question of why do we not pronounce the name of the Yud Kei Vav Kei, that which we've learned in the first hour, you know, the name, the tetragrammaton. Why do we say Adonai and we don't pronounce that four-lettered word? When we speak of love your neighbor as yourself, we are reminded also of the fact that we just cannot do everything by ourselves. Nothing can be accomplished by ourselves. And that's why we have a minyan. When we pray, we need a quorum. Because a quorum of ten. Because we recognize the power of community. We recognize the power of the ten sfirot. The power of unity. So we need 10 people. And that Yud, the numerical value of Yud is?
10.
It's the numerical value of the Yud. It is also the consciousness of unity. It is the consciousness of sharing. Why not 20? Why not 30? Why not 50? Why not 5? Well, this also represents all the Sfirot, 5. Keter, Chochma, Bina, Tiferet, and Malchut. When you call Ziran Pin Tiferet, as some too, then Chesed Gvura Tiferet Netzach Hod Yisod is called Tiferet as one, and that's 5. Right? Keter, Chochmah, Bina, Tiferet, Malchut. So, to say that we're dealing with the 10 Sfirot, I could answer, well, that's also included in the number 5 as well. Because that's Zirhan Pin. Why 10? Because the letter 10 injects into the world that consciousness of unity. It injects the consciousness of love. It injects the consciousness of sharing into the world. That's the power of the Yud. And the reason the people come together is to form the unity of 10 different people so that everyone can receive the complete energy of all the light. So you would go, Keter, Chochma, Bina, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchut. If you get Malchut, if you get the kingdom, you know you have a quorum. Or you can use another statement which says, Hoshia et Amecha, save our nation, Uvarech et Nachalatecha, and bless our inheritance, Ur'em v'naseim ad olam. And the last word is olam, which means world. You got a world, you can pray. So that's the idea of the Yud, unity. And the reason the people come together is to form the unity of the 10 different people so that everyone can receive the complete energy of that light. But what connection does this have with the Yud, besides Yud representing the number 10? There's a difference between sharing and love. We said the Yud was love your neighbor as yourself. When we bring food home and provide for our family, is that sharing? That's not sharing. It's a duty. It's an obligation. So this is not real sharing. This is an extension of yourself. Your family is an extension of yourself. It's an extension of a desire to receive for oneself alone. Real sharing has nothing to do with the act itself. It has nothing to do with whom I share. It has to do with one's consciousness. That's the first lesson we learned about restriction. What was the consciousness at the time of giving? I could even give it to my son, but the gift was not out of a duty or obligation. And that kind of consciousness is what the Yud is trying to teach us. And that is the kind of energy that is drawn into a quorum, into a minyan of people in order to pray. Or better said, that is what is supposed to be received at a minyan with these 10 people. So when a person comes to pray in our synagogue, you need these 10 people. You come to a minyan, you're supposed to make sure that what you feel will go and be shared with everyone else. It's when you want everyone else to have your good feelings at that moment, that is sharing. And you know that, and you know what? If this is what you do, and if this is what your consciousness is at the time of the minyan, then I can assure you that your good feelings will increase. And it doesn't matter where you go and pray. But if everyone has that feeling of sharing, then you get that good feeling. So the Yud is telling you that there's nothing wrong with enjoying what you're doing, but you should use that energy with the other people at the minyan. Share it. Just make sure that your consciousness will bring peace and tranquility. And that tranquility will continue. It's going to be continuity or fragmentation. It's up to your consciousness. And by the way, that's why the desire to receive for oneself alone was conquered on the 10th day of the Hebrew month of Nisan, which is the next month, by the way, the Hebrew month of Aries. And the epitome of this consciousness, what is Aries? It's a lamb, a ram, a lamb. But why on the 10th? Now you know the answer. To create unity. To create real sharing. To take real control over the desire to receive for oneself alone, because the lamb or the ram represents a desire to receive for oneself alone. And the sacrificing of that lamb on the 10th of the month, the first time, was to create unity and to conquer the desire to receive for oneself alone. And the real reason why the Israelites had to do that was they were in Egypt so long that they had bought into the system of a desire to receive for oneself alone. You know, if you live in a society, you take on those traits. So real sharing has to originate from my feeling of the pain of another person. And one of the only people who can help another person's pain is one who has experienced the pain, one who has gone through the same experiences. The best drug therapist is the one who is a rehabilitated druggie. Did you know that? I was once the executive director of the assistance program of the AFL-CIO in Philadelphia. It was a drug rehabilitation program. I could not do therapy. First of all, I knew nothing about it. But since I had never been a druggie, I didn't know what they were going through. The therapists were all rehabilitated drug addicts. And I would meet with them, they would tell me what they were doing, and I would report to the board. But I had no idea what was going on. Couldn't relate at all. So if you really want to feel the pain of another person, then you also have to be lacking something. And perhaps that might be the reason you lose your money or you have a certain pain, so that in the future you'll be the one to help and share with another person and help him get over his pain. Because you did it, and you know how it can be done. And then you'll share from the bottom of your heart. And this time you'll not share because it's a responsibility. You're not going to share because it's an obligation, but you're going to share because you genuinely feel the other person's lack. That's real sharing. And that's real love your neighbor as yourself. So the Yud, through that, with all its... So the Yud thought that with all of its intensity and all of its power, it could come and teach us to overcome causeless hate that is so rampant amongst people, and Jewish people too, and we've spoken about that many times. How one person can hate another with such a hatred, with such a vehemence, with such a passion, for no reason whatsoever. The Yud wanted to overcome the whole world of matter and to change the world to become a world of antimatter. This is the work what the Yud wanted to do. And she felt she could do it by giving the world the real consciousness of love, of real sharing, of the real loving of one's neighbor as oneself. That's what the Yud wanted to teach us. So then the world would have become totally antimatter. We'll see things in the same way as we do now, but it will be a world of antimatter. A world where the positrons will be on the outside, and these positrons will always beam out positive energy, and the inside would be the negative. And the Yud thought she could do it because she is the concentration of all the light, of all the energy. It is the top, the seed level of the Yud Kei Vav Kei, of the totality of the life force of God. It is the totality of the light, and therefore the Yud said, I can create the world with me. So when we look at the world and we say that the universe was created with mercy and with love, you remember in the beginning it was judgment in the spiritual world, but the world could not withstand judgment, so the light created the universe with mercy to give us time for us to make amends. You know that, to repent. That's why this is a world of mercy. So we now have a world of mercy, with time, with repentance. But look around and see all the fighting and the conflicts and the violence and the terror that exists in this world of mercy today. Look at the suffering of hunger today. Look at the suffering of disease, of lack, of dissatisfaction. Where is this mercy? It appears as if there is no mercy, no caring, no antimatter. Where is the world of antimatter that is supposed to be here? Why can't we really see the klipa, that which blocks out the light? Why can't we really see Satan? Why not? Why can't we see what is so wrong and what is so evil? Why do people hate for no reason? Because they don't see the evil forces. Because if they would see the evil forces, they most probably wouldn't do it. They just don't know. They think that this is just the right way. They're absolutely sure that this is the right way. And we see this every day. People doing the wrong things, thinking they're doing the right things. Why can't we see the Satan? And where is Satan? Where is he? Inside of us. It's also manifested in two countries, by the way. Iraq and Germany. Did you know that Germany has the lowest birth rate? Did you know that Germany's youth do not desire to bring children into this world? They would much rather make money and getting established first. That's a known fact, by the way. That's their consciousness. So what does that mean? It means that their consciousness is one of a desire to receive for oneself alone. But that's not all. It's more. Where is their trust in the light? What does it mean to bring a child into the world spiritually? It means continuity. It means creating continuity. The light would have to come. Bringing children to the world is like saying the money is in the bank. Of course, not everybody can say that the money is in the bank, especially today. It might have been in the bank yesterday, but today, who knows, Bear Stearns, Bear, whatever they call it. What do they call the Bear Stearns? Yeah, they might have it. I don't know where it is. Because the man calls from the bank and he tells you, hey, listen, your account is empty. The bills are pouring in. And he answers, no, I've got $100,000 in the bank. But sir, I just checked and you have zero. Listen, the fact that you can't see it is your problem. It's your illusion. And so she hangs up on you. But he could he replenish the 100,000? If you don't think so, then the answer is no. Now we can understand that the force that Germany had and that Iraq has is a force that they want to destroy the world. Now, just translate, Iraq is right-wing, extreme, fundamentalist Muslims. There is a global war out there today. I want you to know, Jews go to Germany, they do business there. I want you to know that, God forbid, there were to be another Holocaust. It might be in Iraq, it might be what's going on today. It might not even be a Holocaust of Jews. It'll be a Holocaust of non-Muslims going on right now. What do you think is going on in Darfur? The
tribal wars.
Huh?
The tribal wars?
Yeah. What do you think happened in Rwanda?
Tribal war, genocide.
Genocide. According to Kabbalah, this is the nature of those two nations. I hate to say that, but that's true. That's what they say. It was no coincidence that Iraq was using gas in their missiles, which were manufactured in Germany. It's no coincidence that the bunker where Saddam Hussein stayed was constructed, the bunker was constructed by Germans. There's no coincidence that a link between these countries, which goes much further and beyond just trading partners, it's a spiritual link. And that link all originates in a place called, spiritually, the Milky Way. In the Zohar, in the portion called Chaye Sarah, that deals with the death of Sarah, which is called the life of Sarah. In verses 71-72, the Zohar states that all the negativity, evil, that is in the world emanates from the Milky Way. Did you know that? That's what the Zohar says. And the Milky Way gets its power from, it is nourished by human negative energy, activity. And that's how the Milky Way is fulfilled, and then it comes back to Earth. It's the same when you pollute the air. You know what will result. It will come back to you. However, we should never forget that everything really began with the sin of Adam, where the yud of the antimatter in the tree of life consciousness, where there was no matter, where there was no power or of a desire to receive for oneself alone, where there was no fragmentation, no limitation, all this did not exist. This was no world of matter. It wasn't a world of matter. The world where Adam and Eve lived was a physical one, but it was antimatter. That was its nature. And that's how it all started. But then Adam sinned, and he totally changed the world of mercy of antimatter into one of matter. And so the world was created with mercy, and Adam, that is to say us, we destroyed it with the sin of Adam because we were all part of it. Now, you know, there was one time when the tree of life reappeared and when antimatter was active again. You know when that was? Mount Sinai. When else? When the temple was in existence. The structure was able to transform the matter to antimatter, says the Zohar. So a person could bring a sacrifice. Come on. You sinned. You sinned. How is the sacrifice going to make an atonement? But you see, in the world of antimatter, the world works differently. In the world of antimatter, you could cleanse negativity. Negativity did not have the force that it has today. Hatred was not as powerful. Anger was not as powerful. That was the power of the Holy Temple. So what happened with the yud? You get the tetragrammaton. It's the highest form of energy that we know. That's what these four letters create. Yud, K, Rav, He. And that is why the Yud felt that since he was the seal of positivity, he was the totality of the positive energy. I can correct the whole world. I can bring back once again the world into a state of antimatter. I can make this world into a world of antimatter forever, and there will be no problem. And if the world is created with me, we'll be able to cancel out the klipah, the veil, the husk, that which blocks out the light. There will be no more Satan. There will be a world of total antimatter. It will be a world of mercy and of antimatter. But that was exactly what Satan was waiting for. That is exactly what Satan wanted. And for this reason, the Yud could never have been the letter with which the world would be created, because Satan said, if I can corrupt the Yud, I'll have everything. I'll have captured the entire tetragrammaton. And then there will never again be a revelation. There will never be light again if I can conquer the Yud. Then I would have everything. So Satan wanted to take the Yud from the system of the holy name. And that is why we always say Adonai and never say the name as it is. Because only when the world of action will be elevated by us through a different consciousness, through our behavior, the world of matter will change to antimatter. That will be the only time when we will be able to say the name as it is written. And we will say it out loud and we'll say it out clearly. And that's also why it was only the high priest who could on the Yom Kippur, on the Day of Atonement, in the Holy of Holies, he pronounced the name as it was. Why? Because there you had the world of antimatter. Satan had no power in the world of antimatter. But as long as we're in a world of action, then Satan is here and he has the power to grab the whole tetragrammaton if we pronounce it. So we say Adonai and we don't say the Yud Kei Vav Kei, so that Satan will not be able to penetrate into the system of the light. We can connect to that name, but we cannot bring it down and pronounce it.